Hello, my name is Amy Toy, the host of Angel Answers with Amy Toy. Besides being a radio show host, I'm also an intuitive counselor who provides spiritual insight into matters of the heart. Are you confused about your love life? Thinking of getting a new job? Wondering about your purpose and why you are here? I work very closely with not only the angelic realm, but also those who have crossed over to the other side. All sessions are strictly confidential. I also offer long-distance healing sessions using angelic energy. This angelic energy, also known as integrated energy therapy, IET, can be done through Skype or on the phone and helps you get the issues out of the tissues. For first-time clients only, I am offering a 20% discount. You can find me online on amytoyamytoy.com, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or email me at angelicamy35@gmail.com or simply call 727-514-7323. May the angels carry you through, and this is for entertainment purposes only. And good evening, everyone. My name is Amy Toy, and I'm your host, the Angel Answers with Amy Toy. And it's a funny thing. We have a guest that is going to discuss his book called Angel Boy. His name is David Mickey. Welcome, David. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Happy to be here.
Yes. And you're enthusiastic about being here, too, because it feels like you have a message for the world. So, David, how does a NASA contractor or contractor get into writing a book about an angel boy?
I'd like to say it was with a lot of support from my peers that I worked with. We had a little inspirational mailer that went around daily to individuals at work who cared to read it. And I used to write morning slogans to start everybody's day. And I just happened to mention one day that I had written a book about some experiences that I had, and my colleagues wanted to read it. And when they read my script or my book, my free book, they're like, well, why don't you go ahead and publish this? And that's how it all began. It was really inspirational. I had lots of support and from my fellow workmates. And so here I am.
That's great. That's great to have people around us, surrounding us, positive influences that support our life's work. And your book, you wrote it. Do you feel you were inspired to write that as well?
Yeah, at the time it was a release, a way to get it off my chest, you might say. The book kind of expresses a lot of details about my divorce and things with my best friend in life at the time. And it was just such a shock how things took such a tragic turn. And so I started writing it down, and the more I wrote, the better I felt. So that's how the book actually became to be. And it was great. It was a really uplifting experience writing the book. And then after I wrote it, I was like, well, maybe this can help somebody else who's in the same situation or something close, you know, and give them hope, make them feel like, well, you know, if this individual is able to get past this, then I can too. So my goal is to help other people, and by doing so, I hope I do. That's for the readers. So, Angel Boy is really an inspirational character in the book, and myself being Angel, you know, which my nickname has always been Angel since I was a young child, And so I adopted that into the book as well. Angel Boy is a loving character, loves life, you know, or I'm speaking second person. If I was speak, you know, candidly, I would say that Angel Boy loves animals and life and the earth and people and wants to do well towards his fellow man and always tries to do the right thing, obviously, and which landed me my career at NASA. Mm-hmm. But it just seems like it's kind of funny that your show is about angels, because I feel like throughout my whole life I've been guarded by an angel or angels. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's a good feeling. The book kind of touches on some experiences where I, was on the operating table, and at the time I raced motocross and was extremely well fit. You know, I mean, my physical condition was excellent, and so they tried to knock me out, and they were giving me the sedative to put me down, and told me to count down from 100, and I got down to about 50, and they're going, "You're not out yet."
Wow.
So they started to infect me with more, and which put me out that time. But after the surgery, they tried to revive me, and I wasn't responding. And But the oddest thing about it is during this situation, I was floating around the ceiling, looking down at everybody, watching them frantically trying to get me to come back around. And I looked off to the distance, and I could see just this, like, white mist, and it was, everything was just so comfortable, you know. And it was almost like I could see family members that I once knew, which had passed, and they were encouraging me to come on. And my son was just a year old at the time, and I was inspired through thought to, do I want to stay or do I want to go back? And mm-hmm. I wanted to go back and see my son grow up, and just that quick, I was back, boom. But while I was in that floating mode, I could hear everything everybody was thinking, and they weren't saying anything, but yet I could hear them, you know. And one, the nurse was like, "He's too young to go," you know, and yep. And the doctor was thinking, "Oh my God, you know, this is going to be a malpractice suit," and you know, and this other lady was like, "I've never lost a patient," the other nurse, and it was really odd how when you're in that state, you're so spiritual, is mm-hmm. the word I want to use. And I did inject that into the book, and a lot of other experiences which carry on throughout the years. We're definitely blessed, and God's watching over us, and angels are definitely working diligently to help us through life to accomplish our goals. And so we're always being watched.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. So. And the angels, one of the things I teach is the angels can't help us unless we ask, because we have free will. And you can't, you know, ask for their help. You know, you can't ask them without asking for their help is what I'm saying. It sounds like you had a near-death experience.
It was.
Uh-huh.
And it was very enlightening for me. And I would say I was 31 years old at the time. And from that moment on, life changed for me dramatically.
Yep.
Because, you know, I no longer felt like I was alone in the world in any means of the word. And I think that was the greatest experience. And so I take each day as it comes, and I'm happy to greet each day, and I have a lot of fun. And if I'm not having fun, I change it, because life's worth living. And it's kind of my message to everybody. So I hope I'm following your line of questioning.
You're fine. Don't worry. Just go with it. Whatever the angels or spirit or God or universe wants us to do, we do it. You know, there's on this show we talk. I mean, we do, you know, ask questions, but also whatever comes up, because somebody in the audience and our listener may need to hear something that you have to say tonight.
Yes. Well, it's kind of odd how in the world today we have a worldly world,
mm-hmm.
and then we have a spiritual world. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of times when you get caught in the worldly world, which I was in during my divorce, mind you, I have never struck, you know, a female or anybody for that matter. And, you know, and to be accused of such things and was really earth-shattering at the time, which inspired me to write the book, because how could I be in this place where I'm being accused of doing acts that I didn't even do, and the legal system and everybody is behind my wife's accusations at the time. And I'm like, you know, I didn't do any of this stuff. And next thing you know, the police are coming in and taking me off the couch and taking me away from my house and my family. And, you know, it happened that abruptly, and all over an accusation. And that whole year, which it took me to resolve it so that I could get back to raising my kids, and was really an eye-opener that, you know, a person can get caught in this worldly environment while the actual reality is something totally different. And I'm being kind of vague on this. I'm not sure how deep you want me to go.
Well,
but,
sometimes being a single father, and I don't have too many of them on my show, it helps other people. So you don't know when somebody's going to hear this show, or you don't know what your experience, whatever you feel comfortable with. I'm very open and honest. On this show, I want people to be comfortable. I want people to listen like you and get inspired that, okay, I can overcome these issues or this situation. So whatever you feel comfortable with, David, it's up to you, okay?
Well, the thing is I should have followed the angels at the time. Instead, I got all confused in the issue of trying to get back to my children. I knew my spouse was not healthy at the time. And the longer they were with her, the more they were going to be exposed to things that I didn't feel like they needed to see or be a part of. And she had kind of taken on a boyfriend that she wanted me to spend weekends, and she wanted to spend weekends with, and every other Wednesday, and I was supposed to be okay with it. And I was like, I want a divorce, you know, And that's when the gloves came off. That's when everything started happening. Mm-hmm. And I started feeling really, really, really sick. And a buddy of mine walked up to me in the store, and he's like, you know, you don't look good, Dave, you know. And I didn't feel good. I had lost a lot of weight. And that weekend, she wanted to spend time with Tommy and wanted me out of the picture. So she instigated that I was trying to kill myself, and along came an ambulance, and you know, her accusations against me, and I was feeling really sickly at the time to begin with. And so they were kind of believing this because, you know, I just wasn't well. And so they stuck me into this clinical observation hospital, and which I was locked in. And first thing they do is they take a sample of your blood, and the next morning my counselor came in and he said, he's like, do you change radiators, I mean, for a living? I was like, no, sir. I worked for NASA. You know, I'm a designer, an engineer, mechanical engineer. And he goes, well, you've got an extreme high concentration of hydroglycol in your system, which is antifreeze. And it dawned on me at that time, because I kept taking the Prestone bottle out from under the sink, putting it out in the garage, and it kept showing up under the sink. Well, she was feeding me antifreeze and slowly trying to, you know, end my life. And they asked me if I wanted to file charges. And, of course, being the person that I was or am, I didn't want my children to go through the fact that their mother would be accused of something. I just knew that I had to get away from it. And this is all outlined in the book in detail as it was played out. And so I knew at that point that I had to get away. And then she got really scared, and because she knew she was caught. So then as soon as I got back home again, because I returned home from the hospital after they realized that I'm sane, there's nothing wrong with this man. He's obviously a victim. And so I returned home, and then she started trying to push things on me and trying to get me to act out, which is not in my nature. And so I just started back to work, going to my day-to-day grind, and I knew what she was up to, and I wasn't really sure what to do at this point. And I came home, and she took a pistol and put it to the back of my head and pulled the trigger. And I had cleaned the gun just weeks before, which is an angel working in my midst again, that there was one slug that was just corroded. And I was like, wow, that would misfire. So I threw it out, and I put the other four shells back. So when she pulled the trigger and it didn't fire, I knew, well, the other cylinders are full. And I took off running. And she threw the gun into the washing machine, and I managed to get into the car, and she took a crowbar and pried the door open, and it started scratching me and just all over my face. And then she called the police and said that I was trying to abuse her, and they took me away again, and this time it was for real. and they took me to downtown Harris County and treated me like I was some kind of, you know, criminal, and I hadn't done anything. And my folks came and posted my bail and got me out, and I wasn't supposed to be within 500 feet of my house or around my children, and had to get an attorney. And my attorney was a lady, and being a lady, she was taking the lady viewpoint of the actions, so she automatically thought that I was guilty. And it was just, she wasn't even on my side. So even my attorney wasn't behind me. And it was a big mess. And being worn down from the antifreeze poisoning, and wow, I wasn't mentally, you know, I wasn't mentally ready for something as heavy as this was. And, you know, my guardian angel just kept sitting on my shoulder, lifting me up, saying, you can do this. Just keep going. And instead of going into the courtroom and pleading my case, I went ahead and took a plea bargain and got 9 months probation. And it cost me $350 a month. And I went through my probation. They had me at the YMCA, and most of the folks there that were in probation would sit there the whole time in a chair. Well, shoot, there was clocks that had to be fixed. There were shelves that needed to be built. I organized all the the whole storage room. I made myself useful. And in fact, when I left, the counselor over the YMCA at the time, she goes, well, why don't you do something wrong again so you can come back? And I was like, no, thank you.
I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, so, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, it was just such a confusing time. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, being totally innocent of something and being totally framed into this whole situation. And but it worked. It got me out of the house. She had the kids for a short time until after the judge and had reviewed the case and said, well, you know, clearly Mr. Mickey is the person to be the, you know, have custody of the children, and which was a real good move in my part. Was when we were up in front of the judge, she said, well, maybe we should have shared custody. And I was like, well, I'll agree to anything she wants, but I want her to go have a drug test right now. I mean, I'll go too. I'll take a drug test, and she'll take a drug test. And then, oh boy, she started backpedaling. No, 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 no. That's fine. He can have custody. And it was like, so being correct and being honest saved me, you know, because, you know, I always try to do the right thing, and that's the Christian in me, you know. And as long as you stay correct with the world and yourself and with God and with your angels, then it seems like whatever wall you get up against is torn down, because you can't dispute the truth, you know, in somebody that's being genuine. And which is where I was at the time. That's all I could think about was, well, just keep walking, stand tall, you know, stay right with the world, don't let it break you, you know. Mm-hmm. And the book emphasizes a lot about this, you know, staying positive, being vigilant in your life, and always trying to strive for greatness, which is where I'm at today talking to you. I mean, it's like I'm still working with this book to publish it so that I can maybe inject more money into my kids' college funds and to replace a lot of the money that was squandered away during this time, during all this legal battle and all this kind of stuff. And it was, we had quite a savings before, and it was all just totally depleted. It just all went away. But that's all worldly stuff. But, you know, since then, I've raised both sons, and they're both great kids, you know, or great young men, I should say. It's been 18 years, and it's been a long road raising the two boys on my own, and also with her, you know, lifestyle poisoning their background. So I say that because, you know, there's that movie called Jackass. I don't know if you remember that. I watched it first because my kids wanted to see it. And I was like, well, I don't think you guys need to watch that. That's just wrong. Well, what does she do? She goes out and takes them to the movie and lets them watch it, you know. And, but, you know, that's just an example of the background distraction of raising them. And my youngest son, he was born asthmatic. His lungs weren't developed. And most of his childhood as an infant, he had to sleep on my chest because he would literally get clogged up with his own fluids.
Ooh.
And I would have to clear his air passages, and he was good again. So, but during all this time, he had oxygen deprivation to where it kind of distorted his mental attitude, or aptitude, I should say.
Okay.
And so it took a lot of work after school with studies, reading with him at nighttime, and meeting with the counselors once a week. And then as time grew on, it was once a month, and then it was once every 6 months. But this went on all the way through his grade school years. And the doctor said he would never graduate high school. Well, he did. And he's holding down a job, doing great. I mean, you could never tell, besides a slight stutter, that he ever had a problem. So,
okay. Wow.
And, but, you know, it all this stuff was just too large not to put into words. And in order to keep everything organized, too, I think that was why I started writing. Was it helped organize my thoughts, because by putting it down on paper, I could read it and, you know, realign my thoughts and my actions and give myself a little bit of confidence that I'm doing the right thing. So, and that's how all the writing started in the beginning.
Okay.
And
good. Good. Writing is very cathartic. It helps heal. It helps you get rid of all that stuff. I mean, that's for me, too. I love to write. And I'm writing myself a few projects that are part of my life as well. And so in this book, though, you talk, your character takes a little, why did it take such a dramatic turn in the book?
Well, I guess, you know, when I met my son's mother, she had issues at home to begin with, and at the time, you know, I was a boy out of my own. I've been on my own since I was, you know, 15 years old, and I just felt like, you know, I wasn't good enough for, you know, a person that had been through life and had everything that just like it's supposed to be. I mean, you go to school, you go to college, you know, and you just, everything falls together and your life's just grand. And so at the time I felt extremely beneath the world in the world's terms. And here was this person who loved me at the time, and I loved her. And I was like, wow, maybe I can fix her and in the process do some growing on my own. So,
yep.
And that's kind of how I got into the relationship. And we lasted 20 years, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, we had a lot of good times. But in those good times, she would have breakdowns where, you know, dramatic situations would happen, like she would have an affair or something like that. And I would just, you know, forgive her because I knew of her childhood and what had happened to her early on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a lot of forgiveness for her. And there was a lot of temper tantrums where she took it out of me. And, you know, I'm a big guy. You know, I mean, she could hit me as hard as she wants. It doesn't hurt. So, you know, but I never told anybody anything. I always kept it under, you know, under wraps. I wouldn't ever let it out that we had any kind of problems or issues. So when it came to head like it did, you know, nobody could believe that she would do something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
In a sense, she'd actually been doing it for years, and I'd just been covering for her. And, but that's a lot of my Christian background, you know, is, you know, we take care of our loved ones. We don't abandon them. And I know a lot of girlfriends that I met after the fact, you know, they're just like, well, I can't believe you didn't just take her to court, you know, send her off to jail. And I was like, well, I mean, would you do that to your spouse when you were married in front of your children? I mean, what kind of role model does that leave for your kids? So,
right.
You know, and it's caused a lot of friction in my dating world after the fact, simply because I allowed so much to go on at the time. And, but once she tried to end my life, I mean, that was the end of it. There was no going back. I was like, this person clearly does not love me, does not have anything, you know, towards my life. Obviously, she didn't feel that my life was worth much, except for when I worked for NASA, if I was to die at that point, she would have gotten $1 million, so...
Wow.
And I think that
okay.
That was her goal. So.
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, you got to do what's right for your children. I don't have children. I know that some of the men I've dated who have had children, they've had to, you know, take care of their family, and you got to respect and honor that. And, you know, some women don't understand that, and you're right. What do you want your children to witness? But also, you know, you can be Christian, in my opinion, but you can forgive, but you don't forget.
Exactly. So, in fact, she has sent home dinners with my children when they go to visit her, like on Thanksgiving, and she sends back plates of food.
Mm-hmm.
I take them and throw them in the trash.
Yeah, well, they say a way through a man's heart is through his stomach, so I guess she's... You know, sometimes you look back at your life and you regret it. You regret a lot of things. So,
yeah,
and I wouldn't eat it either. I'd be like, is there antifreeze in there or what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not trying to laugh at your situation, but I'd be like, I don't want to get poisoned again. I want to live. I got a lot of work to do on this world, in this earth plane. So.
Yeah, and it was, you know, my folks were great people, but they were preoccupied early on in life, and that's why how I ended up out on my own so early.
Mm-hmm.
And But in a lot of these alone times, like back when I was 8 years old, I would go out in the woods and I'd just sit out in the leaves and listen to the wind blow and the trees, and, you know, I'd basically be talking to God, you know.
Yep.
And birds just seemed to flock to me, and it was like this hawk one day landed on a tree above me, and I thought it was, you know, that's really cool. And as I went home, the hawk flew from tree to tree to tree to tree, as all the way to my house. And then it was really, you know, I was sleeping, I was in bed, and there was this shadow outside, and I didn't know what the heck this thing was, you know, and it was kind of scaring me. You know, an 8-year-old child, you see shadows outside your window, you're thinking, oh my God, it's a ghost or something, you know?
Yeah, it's the boogeyman. Yep.
Yeah. So I grabbed my flashlight and I shined it out the window, and it was that hawk right outside my window.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, wow, you know, how profound is that? So for years, it seemed like I'd leave food out for the hawk and, you know, feed it. And we became friends. We never actually became, you know, where it landed in my hands or anything, but it was always somewhere close. And I actually had an alligator back then, too, which was another story. But
what part of the country are you in?
Galveston area, Galveston, Texas.
Okay, Texas, okay.
And right on the coast. I grew up on the water.
Okay.
And I've always had lots of woods and things to play in, which today they're all container port storage areas. So they've tore down all the big, beautiful trees and poured concrete. So it's kind of sad, but, you know, it was a great place to grow up. And, but ironically, when I was out at Armand Bayou Nature Trail, I was walking through the woods again, doing what I do whenever, you know, I want to think. And I was sitting out there, and this time a red-winged hawk came down and landed on my shoulder. And
wow.
I just sat motionless. I was like, oh my God, is this really happening, you know? And the bird smelled so musky. It wasn't a bad smell, but it was just a curious smell, you know, real wild, musky kind of smell. And it was looking down at me, turning its beak down towards my face and looking at me. And I wasn't looking up at it because, man, those talons were kind of scary.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I've seen a red-tailed hawk up close, yes.
Mm. Yeah, and it shoved off and flew off into the air. And I was like, Lord, I got the message. You know, it's like, let it all go, you know. And all my anger and everything just flew away with this bird. And which gave me a whole lot of semblance of what just happened, and also a lot of comfort. And I'd like to think that was our angels working for us again.
Yes. Birds of heaven usually are messengers to heaven. The hawk is something that teaches us to have big sight, a big scope of sight. Birds are, messengers to heaven. And when they come to us, they're usually a form of a loved one that has, you know, gone to heaven or crossed over. And that's interesting that you have an affinity with nature. Feels like, you know, God, the angels, or whatever talks to you that way as well.
Yeah, now we have owls that like to hang out in the trees behind our house, so which is really neat.
Yes, yeah, because the owl, their head can go almost all the way around.
Really?
And they can go around, and they have good sight at night. So I forgot what the owl is. I'll have to look it up, but there's different animals you can look up, and there's messages from, you know, from heaven and from the angels and stuff. So animalspirits.com is a very good website for that. It's called Totem Animals, but that's a little tidbit for you. Yeah,
wow.
Native American look at that. Yeah, they look at the animals and their signs from different, you know, the entities, if you will. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. That's it.
Yes. Yes. Hey, it helps to be, you know, intuitive, an angel worker. So how is it being a new published author? How does it feel?
It feels great. It's it's hard reaching out to the listeners. I think that's the most difficult part. It's actually publishing the book was the easy part. The hard part is doing the marketing. And, you know, Jay Mata, he stepped in and he's really done wonders for my marketing.
Yeah, I know Jay very well. He's a great guy. I've worked with him for a long time. So he is great at marketing. And I would just encourage you to keep writing. I don't care what it is. Keep writing even and just keep going because you never know what's going to resonate and click with someone. We all have messages to give. I think there's certain, you know, people like you and I and other people out, our listeners out there, that are called to step up right now.
Yes.
You know, so
yes.
That's what I tell people, just follow your dream, you know, just follow your dream, and everybody has a purpose. And it's what you love to do. And sometimes you may not think that's your purpose, but that's what it is.
Yeah, I can remember back in grade school, Ms. Littleton, she liked for me to write anything, and she'd give me grades for it. And, you know, I didn't see that as being a path back then. I was more into building motors and, you know, mechanical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I often want to reach out to her and say, hey, you want to check out my book?
Yeah, and that's, and I was going, I love to write. I still do. I'm writing two books right now, and I have nonfiction and fiction. So I've been writing since I was a kid, and my dad used to go, why are you pulling over those full books of yours? Well, that got me smart.
Yeah. It does.
It got me where I need to be, Dad. So, God sometimes uses those, the smart ones and the simple ones and the humble ones. Yeah,
it's funny how, you know, I think my message of, you know, failing on the operating table has helped out a lot of people, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I'll be in church and they're just like, you know, I can't see this, you know, so how can I believe it? And I was like, and so I'd share my story about, you know, failing on the operating table, and they're just, you know, blown away. They're just like, really? And I was like, yes. I mean, the spirit world is as real as your own hand, you know, I mean, as you are, you know, this isn't the end of the world. You know, this isn't the end of everything. This is just the beginning.
Yep.
And it's up to us to pass the test of life to get into heaven, you know. And it's, you know, to me, that's what it's all about. I mean, you stay diligent, you stay true and faithful, and you know, listen to people such as myself, who are trying to share a message that, you know, that life is just for a moment, you know, and then we go into eternity up in heaven. And, you know, that's the biggest thing that I got out of the operating table experience. I keep calling it that. operating experience.
I've had three near-death experiences myself, so I just call them crossing to the other side and getting kicked back.
Yeah. But I had a clear choice. Do I want to stay or do I want to go? And that was the the strangest thing about that experience is, like, you know, in heaven, it's not there. There is no, you know, well, maybe I will, maybe, you know, maybe I'll stay. Can I, you know, there's no wishy-washy in heaven. Yeah. It is or it isn't. So it's like as soon as I thought, I want to see my son grow up, boom, it was done. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no room for wishy-washy behavior. So, mm-hmm. you know, in your walk with Christianity, I mean, you can't just be it one day and then not, you know, and not be it the next day. You really got to walk the walk, you know?
Because if you don't, I don't know. I can't lie to myself anymore. I used to try to be somebody other people wanted me to be, and it's just like, nope, this is who I am, and if you don't like it, there's the door, and don't let it hit you on the way out.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Uh-huh.
But early on, you remember when I was talking about the hawk, mm-hmm. which is in the book. Well, some years later, my folks parted ways, and I was with my dad one summer, and we were coming back from a boat race in Palacios, Texas, and the wheel literally fell off the trailer, mm-hmm. you know, and Dad didn't want to leave his boat out in the middle of nowhere with nobody, so he left me to watch over the boat, and him and Barbie, his girlfriend at the time, drove off. Well, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm in a pair of blue jean cutoffs, and which is well and good, but then it started to rain, and it rained all night long. And by the next morning, I was pretty cold, wet, tired, hungry, and I was 12 years old at the time. And so I asked God, you know, I was like, you know, Lord, I'm not testing you. I don't, you know, I'm not demanding anything from you. But if you could find some way to bring me something to eat, something to drink, I'd be eternally grateful. And, you know, 5 minutes later, after I said that small prayer or my conversation to God, a truck pulled up behind the jet boat, and he got out, and he said, your prayers have been answered. And he gave me a pack of Twinkies and a Coke and read me a script from Psalms, and then he went about his way. And I was just like, I was floored. I couldn't believe. But these are key acts in my life that have driven me, you know, in my Christianity walk, in my Christian walk in life. So, but that was really an inspirational event for me as a young child. And, you know, you would think that would tell you that you're not alone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't help but ask yourself, well, he just saw me in the boat and figured he would get me something to eat and drink. I was a young kid, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, the failing on the operation table, that just summed it all up for me. It was just like, there is no question. There's absolutely no question. You know, God is real. Angels are real. So, and your show is real. So,
yes.
I like what it's about. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's I've been doing it a long time, and I feel like I'm getting my own changes as well. So, you know, wherever I'm supposed to be led, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, and it seems like the older you get, the more callous we get inside, you know, from events and activities that have happened, you know, throughout our years. And for me, I've had a real exciting life. I mean, you know, my dad being a boat racer, and I got to meet so many people. My grandfather was a ship captain, and he knew people like Raquel Welch, John Wayne, the Virginian, all these real big celebrities, and they were in and out of our lives a lot. And it was just, you know, a lot of fun growing up. And I've had people say, well, would you do anything all over again? I was like, no, probably wouldn't. You know, it all happened the way it did for a reason. And, you know, even though there was deep dips, you know, into the negative world, but still, you know, it takes a negative to make a positive.
Yes, and if you can look at your experiences. I mean, I know I had somebody from my family contact me recently, and I'm like, I'm not going to fall into that trap again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why I said in the show, I can forgive, and I don't mind, but you are where you're supposed to be, and I'm where I'm supposed to be. So keep on trucking, sister, you know.
Yep.
I got a purpose here, and you're not going to deter me from that. So it's interesting how you can learn from your life, and you can tell it like it is. Like I said, if you don't like it, there's the door, because I'm not here to be a doorman.
True.
So, yeah. So, David, we're running out of time. I don't know where this time has gone. It goes by fast. Where can people find your book, and any parting advice? Well, we have a few minutes for people who are looking to get published.
I would find folks like, you know, like Jay Mata, to work with you and look for people who are in the positive light, because they're going to work for you 100%. You know, I say that because I've hired a lot of different people who wanted nothing more than money from, you know, Jay Mata himself. He's into it for all the right reasons. And on the same token, do your walk that way. You know, stay vigilant, stay positive. And even though it seems like all you've got is a bunch of negatives, stay positive, because eventually it'll all work out for the good, you know. And don't give up on your dreams and your passions. You know, stay vigilant and stay true to yourself, basically, because your life is important to you. And no matter what anybody else does in the world, your life is what's important. So, and who you are to yourself. So always be honest to yourself, positive to yourself. And if you want to find my book, you know, Angel Boy Productions Online.com, you can get an electronic copy. You can pay through PayPal, which is extremely safe. I didn't want it. Credit card thing, because nobody wants to put their credit cards out there online. And then Angel Boy by David Mickey.com. You just search up Angel Boy, and you're gonna find my book. It's all over the internet, and it comes through Ex Libris, and you can get a hardbound copy. It's even in Barnes and Noble. They've got it. But I encourage the listeners out there to check it out. And, you know, I understand it is my first book, so, you know, I've had some folks have some negative input on it. But, you know, hey, you got to start somewhere.
as long as you do it and start somewhere. Anywhere, but sometimes you just have to start. And if people don't like it, like I said, there's the door. Don't let it hit you on the way out. That's what I do.
Well, everybody's entitled to their opinion. So it's their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your opinion, they've got theirs.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, David, thank you for coming on tonight. It was a pleasure to meet you, and I'm glad you came on. And I look forward to your next book because I have a feeling you'll have another one.
Yeah, it's called Blue Pearl, What If?
Ah, okay. Okay, well, keep writing. Keep going.
Yes, ma'am.
You'll be fine.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you for coming on. And I'm Amy Toy for Angel Answers with Amy Toy. Join me next week for another inspirational guest. Have a great night, and may the angels carry you through.
Too.